Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Gangish with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR Revenue Marketer Radio. Every Thursday at 1 o'clock, we meet to talk to a real revenue marketer and learn tips and tricks on how to make that transition from traditional marketing, jumping all the way over to revenue marketing. And before I introduce our guest, I want to take a minute just to, again, redefine the term revenue marketer. It seems to be gaining an incredible amount of traction in the market, so we're very, very glad to hear that. And quite frankly, any marketer whose job is to connect marketing to revenue gets the term revenue marketer. But the way we look at the revenue marketer is it is a specific type of marketer, just like you've got a product marketer or a MarCom marketer. The revenue marketer is that marketer who is focused on campaigns that create revenue or revenue-related kinds of accountability. They are completely responsible for the top of the sales funnel, getting those high-quality leads in, and then also interacting with and nurturing leads until they are sales-ready. And they all use some type of marketing automation platform tightly integrated with CRM to power the revenue marketing practice and to get those revenue marketing results. Well, I am so pleased to introduce our guest today, Yvonne Anderson. I've known Yvonne, gosh, probably at least a couple of years now, and I think I can call her an old-timer in the demand generation business because she's been working in the demand generation space and running Eloqua for about 3.5 years. So let me give you a little bit about her background, and then we're bringing her on, and she's talking about one of my favorite topics. You know, and it's all about campaign effectiveness. So rather than just dropping a campaign, how do you envision, create, and execute and measure campaigns that actually make an impact on revenue? But first, a little bit about Yvonne. She is currently the Senior Marketing Manager at NCM Fathom, and she integrates multiple marketing disciplines. So that as a seasoned online marketing professional, she brings a lot to the table. Even though she has a background in traditional marketing and communication, she's really made that leap from traditional on into revenue marketing. She has more than 15 years of strategic marketing experience, really important in this game, in both digital and traditional mediums. She began her career on the agency side, learning the foundations of the creative process, design, and client management. Since crossing over to the brand side, Yvonne has provided expertise to both B2B and B2C organizations in technology, including software development, internet data center hosting, and also telecommunications. Now, currently at NCM Fathom, which is actually a division of NCM Media Networks, Yvonne is responsible for, I have to take a deep breath here because she's responsible for a lot of stuff, strategic development, execution and measurement of demand creation and nurture programs, sales enablement, social media, content strategies, and data management. She is an early adopter of marketing automation. As I mentioned, she's been an Eloqua customer for the last 3.5 years. And her role at NCM included spearheading the transition and adoption of the automation platform, the creation of the processes and people needed to support the infrastructure. Previously, Yvonne was responsible for marketing strategy at Raytheon, where she was on the launch team for eCenter Technologies, a Raytheon business that specializes in commercial hosting and application development and support. I am continuously amazed at the quality of the talent that we have on the radio show. Yvonne, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Debbie. It's a privilege.
You know, it's so interesting. You know, when I meet marketers who are revenue marketers, those marketers responsible for demand generation and connecting marketing to revenue, typically when you take a look at what they're responsible for, it's kind of like you. It's all these different areas. You've got strategic development, execution and measurement. You've got nurture programs, sales enablement, social media. Are all those kinds of things necessary, do you think, Yvonne, to building a revenue marketing practice?
Absolutely. I think, you know, where we start to also silo ourselves, which is never a good thing, we all need to be diverse, is that, you know, the marketer today, you know, one has a very diverse just palette of different tools to use. So all the different channels that we get to then reach our buyer and our prospects with. But then also as a marketer, you need to then, one, both have a diverse skill set and then really understand, well, how do those then contribute to the overall, marketing revenue cycle?
It's so absolutely true. It's kind of like when you begin to explain the role of the revenue marketer, it is filled with a lot of new skills, a lot of diversity across skills, and I think just the area that you're responsible for just kind of shows that. But why don't we back up, because, again, I'm so intrigued because, you know, marketing automation, revenue marketing, demand generation, that is still relatively new to the market. It's still kind of early days, and you've been at this for 3.5 years. So why don't you take us back to 3.5 years ago and share with us what was going on and what made you guys decide to want to buy a marketing automation system. And then from there, we'll talk about your favorite topic, I know, which is campaign effectiveness.
Fantastic. You know, when we first were considering different marketing automation tools, the diversity of the actual number of companies that were playing in the space was quite small. And so you could definitely talk to a bunch of people about the concept of marketing automation and what that meant, but it was such a paradigm shift that really a clear winner for us became, who can really understand the concept and translate that to our business. And so for us, we saw the immediate opportunity to evolve our marketing practice. And really that's what it really meant to us as a company and an organization is that, you know, we were very loosely structured in terms of some of our lead management processes. It was very manual and, we kind of self-professed that we ran a company on Excel spreadsheets, which, you know, it's I think, fine at a certain state, but we were becoming a much more mature organization, and the maturity of a marketing organization kind of needed to follow suit with that. So looking at the different marketing automation providers, you know, Eloqua emerged very early on as the clear choice for us. And, you know, one, we had a tremendous supporter and within our own organization in order to actually rally it through the approval process. So it was, we were ready to go, and being an early adopter just made it, that wonderful opportunity to evolve our marketing team as a whole in terms of our skill sets as well.
So I'm really interested. Somebody asked me the other day, they said, what kind of customers does Pedowitz work with? And I told them it's basically when a marketing organization is ready to evolve into the next level, it's really moving from traditional marketing over to revenue marketing. So when I hear you say you guys were ready to evolve the marketing practice, you know, what was going on? What were kind of the drivers there that was you guys were saying we need to evolve our practice to the next level? When 3.5 years ago, that level was hardly, it was pretty ill-defined. So kind of what was going on from a strategic or from a tactical perspective in your company that you guys felt like you needed to evolve?
I think there were a couple drivers, actually. One, we saw an opportunity, one, for marketing to better align with sales. I think, you know, we noticed that deficiency, and we're trying to figure out a better way to automatically tie our efforts to revenue. And it's actually funny because, you know, I think back and I realize, gosh, our challenges were more about how do we drive more leads into our sales team. I mean, we were still about generating, you know, quantity, not necessarily quality, but really what the whole plug for us with marketing automation to our sales team was that we can now deliver you a better quality lead that's actually more qualified. And then as a marketer, it came back to us with a return of, now you get to be a smarter marketer because you are really understanding behavior and the analytics that drive people to want to buy. So the opportunity for us to improve is, one, an entire effectiveness of a selling organization and a marketing organization back then. Now we're just called the revenue team, but back then we were still very separated by our disciplines. So really our charge was drive, you know, more leads into the sales team, but it gave us the back end to have the better understanding of who that person was and what they were doing and how they were actually interacting with us. That really kind of made us be better marketers.
I got to tell you, Yvonne, those were some very forward thoughts 3.5 years ago. And I love the fact that you're now called the revenue team. And you really focused both effectiveness just not on marketing, but also on the sales team, because it takes a combination of those two things to really make that significant impact on revenue. And I love that instead of having the silos that you guys have kind of blended it to say we're all responsible for revenue, now let's go out as a team and get this together. That's pretty phenomenal.
It didn't start that way, though, Debbie.
Yeah.
It was a ton of work. And, in fact, that probably, you know, the big epiphany was probably not until, I would almost say, not quite a year ago when, you know, because I think, you know, marketing really was trying to drive the bus because we had this wonderful tool. You know, Eloqua was a fantastic, you know, it was probably a bigger tool than we needed even at that point. But when we brought it on board, you know, we were ready just literally to jump in and, you know, and just – and get our feet not just, you know, damp, but completely soaked. So for us, we saw the opportunity. And again, it was, hey, how do we start to then implement this? What does that process look like? And we were ready for it, but I don't know if exactly our sales team at that point was. You know, we had some definite transitions in our management team. And so there were some other drivers, I think, that were helping us kind of push this further down the path to getting towards this revenue cycle management between, you know, where sales and marketing are jointly in it together. And but it wasn't always that way. I mean, we definitely had challenges. And like I said, probably the first 2.5 years of really leveraging Eloqua, it's like, well, what does marketing's tool do? So the challenges were very, very evident to us. But, you know, we made that leap when the sales team start to identify those key milestones in their own process. And marketing, you know, we knew that was the right time for and the right opportunity to better align. So,
you know, and you're right. It doesn't happen overnight. The fact that you guys are 3.5 years later and, you know, a year ago that really came together is absolutely true. But it's so funny. I mean, we talk endlessly about sales and marketing alignment. And Yvonne, don't you agree that without that alignment, you just cannot be a revenue marketer?
Oh, by all means. It's kind of one of those things where it's, you know, peas and carrots, they go together. And, you know, can you have them independently? Well, I guess you could, but they kind of taste better when you're, if you kind of co-mingle.
Okay,
so.
I have not heard that analogy, but I love it. I may use it. I'm doing a webinar next week with the Primo on how to align your sales and marketing team, because like you, I completely believe if you don't have that alignment, I guarantee that you're not making an impact on revenue, or at least it's going to be it's going to be circumspect. Let's put it that way. So completely agree. It is a ton of work to get that, and hopefully the webinar next week will help some folks kind of shortcut that process. But anyway,
yeah. Well, honestly, you know, it kind of got out of the us versus them, you know, mentality, which you still sometimes hear, but that again was one more paradigm shift, is just the way that you think of things in terms of just sales and marketing became, you know, people try to say smarketing. Well, then it's really for us,
yeah.
It just became, you know, we're the revenue engine of our organization. So
I love it.
We're all responsible for this.
And that's exactly the way it should be. One other idea around this sales and marketing alignment, you know, so you're right. Marketing gets it earlier because they're out looking for something. And sales tends to keep on doing what they've been doing. And so getting them up to speed to kind of help them see the vision of what can be can often require a lot of work because they've been doing it one way for a very, very, very long time. So as a marketer, you're all excited about the change and the possibilities, but it's really a process to educate the sales team and to bring them on board, and so that they have your vested interest in mind and that you can work together as one team.
It's absolutely true.
So let's talk about your favorite topic. And you know, as everybody knows, I talk to folks in advance to kind of see what they're most interested in, what they're most passionate about right now, because I figure if I'm talking to a revenue marketer like Yvonne and she's passionate about a topic like campaign effectiveness, especially campaigns that make a demonstrable impact on revenue, that I bet there's some other marketers out there who are probably thinking and trying to execute the same thing. So why don't you begin by telling us, Yvonne, just at a high level, how you guys approach campaigns?
I think it all really starts with, you know, really finding the right partners that can help you with each different step of the actual planning and strategy process. You know, for us, yeah, that was something in which you have to really understand the landscape, what your own challenges and deficiencies are first, but know who actually can help support you and offset that. So for us, when you know we set out, I think the first thing you need to do is for that we do is you know we establish what is really the need here and say what do we ultimately. It's almost like starting at the back end. What are the key outcomes you need this campaign to do? You know, you can't build and move mountains until you actually know, well, how far do we have to go? And I think for us, we actually need to start off and say, well, what can we expect also with the predictive side? What can we expect this specific campaign or program to do relative to either the segment that or the key, the actual the key vertical or whatever you're trying to accomplish, breaking it down into something that is much more digestible in terms of those key outcomes. So that's the first thing we do.
Let me ask you just a couple questions, Yvonne, about key outcomes, because first of all, I think you're absolutely right. I think a lot of marketers really don't take the time to think about the key outcome of any campaign that they do. You know, they're just dropping stuff left and right. And, you know, those kinds of marketers are really measuring their activity. They're really not measuring their impact. So I talked to various marketers about outcomes and the kinds of things that they're trying to get. But what are some concrete examples of the kinds of key outcomes that you guys think about when you structure a campaign?
You know, it's funny. We actually look at it in terms of, the number of leads that are actually in our revenue cycle at each given stage. So as we start to see things convert, we establish key benchmarks as far as what our impact is to those key defined stages. And ultimately, as they then convert through that cycle into revenue at the very, very at the very end, and what's nice about it is actually having a nice analyst to support us through this because, sometimes a lot of these things have to be very manual outside of systems. And for us, what those other key outcomes are, well, how many of these are existing customers versus net new? It's obviously much more challenging to get a brand new contact within a new organization to convert. And so for us, it's we have to figure out, well, how many of the people that are within the cycle are new versus existing, and how do we then move them through, even if they are within this brand new campaign that is, meant to achieve, and it could be towards a key vertical, it could be towards, it could be for retention or attrition reduction. But whatever the actual program is, we have to set the key outcome at the end to say we need to make sure ensure that we are lowering attrition by X percent. And for us, a lot of those key metrics are derived by a challenge that we identify on the business side at the beginning. So if we see that, our attrition rate with Theater Church, for example, is growing, we need to know that, how can marketing help shrink that? And so even if it is a marginal percentage change, we know that we can affect the revenue at the very end of the day.
That is so interesting. And so I'm going to back up even further because I think a lot of people use the word campaign to mean different things. So what is a campaign to you guys?
Oh, my goodness. Now you open the can of worms. It's funny. I actually used to dread the word campaign because everybody just uses it so nonchalantly. Just drop a campaign. And it's exactly what you just said. Just when you just start dropping stuff left and right without clear intent, it's that intention. It's that intentional piece that really makes proper planning and strategy help you start with, get to key outcomes. And so if you know what that campaign needs to do at the end of the day, not just in say, generate X amount of revenue, well, that's always great, but there are other key metrics in there that you can also achieve outside of just the sole thing being an actual revenue metric. But the word campaign, it really got to be an ugly term, at least in my eyes, because our sales team just said, well, drop a campaign. So we actually backed it up further than that to say, well, how does this impact our marketing strategy? Is this toward a lead generation or demand gen program, or is this something that is more sales enablement, or is this more about an awareness campaign in which you need to seed the awareness piece as a strategic initiative? So for us, we almost had to train our sales team to understand a little bit more about how we view marketing and how we use multiple channels in order to drive and support you know, this marketing ecosystem of multiple channels and multiple points of inquiry, multiple points of awareness generation. So,
I love that.
So a campaign to us,
it's
composed of multiple challenges. Multiple channels, and we know that we need to play in all areas. So that's kind of like what our ecosystem looks like.
Okay. I love the word you use. I think I'm going to add it, if you don't mind. I'm going to add, when I think about the hallmark and some key words that describe the revenue marketer, I love intentional. Love that. It just says a whole lot. And so I also like the fact that you guys have clearly, you know, campaigns depending on what you're trying to do. So if you're trying to build awareness, if you're trying to impact the demand generation funnel, if it's something around sales enablement, so you kind of have those campaigns kind of structured in that area. But I also love the fact that at some point your sales team got to the point where they were turning to you and saying, can you just drop a campaign for us, you know? While it's not exactly the right way to do it, at least they were recognizing, you know, that when you did things, you know, they absolutely got an impact. So, all right, so when you take a look at campaigns, one of the things you talked about first, you know, what is the need of the campaign, and to identify key outcomes. So where do we go next?
Well, the next thing for us was to understand, well, who are you targeting? Who's the who? And what is your experience with them from in the past? So what is the historical data that you have that can help you better understand predictive results? So for us, you know, we'll look at, you know, who are our key customers that are within this specific segment? And then what are the key messages that they try to we need to drive that help relate to key challenges. So a lot of times we'll go back and, you know, one, we'll work very closely with our sales team, but we'll look at their different contact records within, you know, CRM, and actually look to see how our salesperson has interfaced with them, but then also, too, what their activity record looks like within Eloqua. So what are their click histories? You know, what type of content they're downloading? So then that helps us with both top-line messaging, but then also with our offer and content strategy. So, you know, when we're trying to position an offer, you know, when we look at what are they responding to, well, you can't just start creating content that you think is going to be relative to a point in the conversion cycle, whether it be, that buying cycle from awareness to education through actual conversion. And I think the point for us was to understand, well, what that offer strategy is probably the biggest piece of your testing, whether it be testing a white paper as what is going to drive response versus potentially a top 10 tip. So, you know, understanding how your offer strategy and some of the content you develop can help. That actually leads me to my next one, which is the testing plan, you know, A-B testing. There's so many different pieces and parts of a campaign that you can tweak, and part of that can just be either in your email, but then it also can come back to the design and the creative side. So having a partner that understands email design and best practices is so, so important. And then the actual testing piece, you have to make sure that you're laying the groundwork for that. And I know that took us a while, and we're still very, very new to this because, you know, and we're not perfect in any way. We still will always try to improve a campaign with marginal daily improvement, just one touch point at a time and one test at a time, without trying to take on too much, because we're a small, scrappy team, but we also need to say, how do we then improve every touch point we send to a prospect or customer.
Absolutely. So I want to go back to something that you said in targeting, and I want to make a comment, and I'm going to kind of see what you thought about it. Jim Linscold of the Linscold Group is a good friend of mine, and he wrote a book called Marketing ROI, and he also publishes an annual study on marketing ROI. But Jim, I've seen Jim present, and he has got this one slide where he shows the five number one things that you can do to make the biggest impact on ROI. And the number one thing that he said is that you could better segment. So what do you think about that comment?
Oh, I agree. It's actually something I was doing last evening. Because I think that most marketers, we think we know who we're talking to. And instead of actually letting some of either the data and analytics that you that are coming directly from your prospect, you can't really segment effectively. And so you have to know, well, where do you win? Who are your existing customers? But then what are the messages and key messages and offers that are driving them to come back to you, and what makes you attractional to them? I mean, I absolutely agree that an ill-placed message or a non-segmented, irrelevant message is going to actually hurt you far more than you realize. And so that's why it's absolutely critical that you take the time. Yeah, take the time to refine your list. I mean, data is so undervalued in so many organizations, and mine included. You know, we're still trying, you know, as a marketing team, I see it and I have that absolute vision for it, but getting an organization to understand the importance of the data that they have, you cannot properly segment until you have quality data. But then how do you get it? And so there's so many different data strategies. Yeah.
Let me ask you this question, because everything just kind of trickles down and everything is just kind of interwoven. So, you know, like you can't have a good segmentation strategy until you have a good data, right? And you can't really do effective campaigning until you've got a good segmentation strategy. But one of the things that, to your point, you know, as a marketer, we think we know. But really, when you start looking at and reading digital body language, to use a term from Eloqua, it really becomes quite stunning what we don't know, and really, you know, how we do need to change. And then to your point, you know, how do we test? I think some of the biggest aha moments for marketers when they really come into demand generation is when they test and they're convinced that it's going to turn out one way and it turns out the complete opposite way. You know, so I think to your point about, you know, who are you targeting? And you think you know, but guess what? You might not know. But also, I think marketers, to your point, Yvonne, we need to obsess over data and segmentation. And when I talk about obsess, I mean obsess. I'm a big believer these days in micro strategies, and those are strategies these are handcrafted lists based on demographics, based on online behavior, but they give you so much of a better result. So, you know, we talk about this, and it makes sense when we talk about it. Why do you think it's so hard to do?
Well, I think, number one, not enough marketers obsess about their data. I love how you turn that because you know, it's funny. Just like, you know, marketers come in so many shapes and sizes. I mean, you have the comm side marketers that are really great at putting a message together, email design, and so forth. But then there's such that right side, left side of your brain that we need to make sure, that analytics side, that we're really understanding the data and what it means. And I think some can bridge it well, but you need to have an actual, you know, marketing operations and marketing team that really has all of those type of skill sets within it. And if you don't have someone that really understands data, and what it means to your campaign, and how to become an obsess, you know, become dedicated to it and its importance within your campaign structure and strategy, you're not obsessing about it enough. So that's one of the things that, you know, for us, you know, I still don't probably have enough champions within my own organization that really understand the importance of data. And so that's even something that we're challenged with. So how do we become more obsessed with data? I think it goes back to saying, well, how important is it? If you view a campaign, and maybe this would be a wonderful test that I would always strongly encourage, is look at data that is probably poor coming out of a CRM, you know, tool like many of us have. You know, a lot sometimes our databases in CRM can be a little bit ugly. But if you look at the data that's in your CRM, test it and say, you know, this is existing, but then look at something that's far more appended and corrected and updated and current, and then test those two models and show the difference in terms of the percentage of effectiveness between the two. And it could just be a very, very simple test. But if you look at at how easy a true segmented model with message relevancy, offer alignment, and how that drives a higher conversion, just not even just a simple click-through, but you can see it there too, but then also then how they move into the sales stage, how you're introducing content that paths well through that actual buying cycle, you're going to be so much more effective. And if you can get and convince your sales team of that, they will help you actually acquire the data that you need as a marketer to help drive your campaigns and higher effectiveness.
Yeah, completely agree with that. So I have another challenging question for you. How in the world do you find time to test? That's the number one thing I hear from marketers who began this journey to revenue marketing when they've got a marketing automation system. They can test. They should be testing. But, you know, I mean, I literally just left a client this morning, and they said, we have no time to test. What would you say to somebody like that?
Well, I say I've walked in their shoes before, and we all have. Sometimes you'll drop a campaign because someone needs it, and they need it today. And so real time has its place. But I think what we all miss is that you can look and say, okay, great, what can this program or this campaign tell me? What one additional thing can I do, and it can be very, very simple, that's going to help me maybe drive a better conversion, and then test that one simple element change. And even though you think you don't have time, and trust me, I mean, I understand that it is marketers. We are so strapped for how do I do all of the things that I need to do in addition to cleansing my data and obsessing about my data. The side that says testing should be a much, much greater priority for all of us, because sometimes you don't realize that the low-hanging fruit can be very much made much more apparent by a simple test.
Sure.
And it does not have to be something more complex.
You're right. And it's just hanging there, you know, ready for it to happen. So,
absolutely.
So let's go back
and partnering also helps. I mean, I'll definitely say find the right partner that really understands, you know, multivariate. Yeah, absolutely. If you're not familiar with it, get the right partner.
Yep, completely agree with that. So when you're building a campaign, we'll go back to the each steps. You talk about what's the need, and, you know, you identify the key outcomes. You then talk about who are you targeting. You do some testing. You know, along the way, you have to obsess over the data, you know, to make sure you've got it clean and it's going to be right. And so, and then, of course, it's all about aligning the right message and the right assets to that persona, to that profile that you're going after, and incenting the right kind of behavior. And then what's next?
You know, for us, you know, that's when it starts to fall into the actual lead distribution category, where we have to look at, you know, how is this going to then migrate from, you know, what is sales ready look like? What is inquiry versus someone that's more of a nurture prospect or nurture inquiry that's still trying to really cultivate the education about our offering? You know, what we do is so vastly different. You know, not everybody understands what it means to communicate, you know, a mission-critical business message on a big screen in a movie theater. So for us, you know, that education component is so huge. So and when we actually rolled out lead scoring, that affected our lead management and distribution process. So, and our sales team, you know, really struggled with that, because you mean that someone that just downloaded content, you mean they don't want, they're not ready for sales. Well, they actually haven't inquired yet. And they aren't ready to speak to a salesperson. So if I hand you someone that's only downloaded content, they're not ready to talk to you yet. And that's why you have a website, and that's why you have what's all these different structured marketing programs between nurture, drip campaigns. And also then, you know, you're creating content that is to help them through that educational process, because people don't want to be sold. They want to learn.
So did your sales reps want to get like any move that people made on the site? They just wanted to get everything?
They did. They want to know. And I think that it's very common. They want to know, you know, one, who are you marketing to? How are they responding? And so, you know, that's part of the view that they need to be able to see and have. What is the level of activity so that I can respond appropriately? And so we do let them know with notifications, you know, even if it is just a simple content download, so that they can choose to kind of see what the behavior is and how their key prospects are actually interfacing with us, even before the point that they may outreach for an opportunity because they aren't sales ready. And so, you know, we know that having a more informed sales team is extremely helpful. So giving them that insight has definitely helped even bridge that sales and marketing.
I completely agree with that. I mean, you know, the more visibility you can give the sales team to online behavior, what prospects are doing, and then letting them see, you know, if this action is taken and you take this action, then you get this result. Because, again, what I like to tell people is that when you begin this journey to revenue marketing and you're really thinking about online behavior, you never sat around before thinking about it, especially if you were in sales, right? So now you have a chance to think about it, practice it, try it, and really get to understand it. And I'll tell you a funny story. My first career out of college, I was a commodities broker for Merrill Lynch. I did that for 9 years before the internet, I might add. So we would sit in the office all day long looking at the quotrons and watching the quotes bounce around. So we always knew where the action was, right? It's the same thing for sales. You know, even before the face-to-face or the phone engagement takes place, they're able to understand what that, you know, I'm ready to buy behavior looks like, so that they have a better understanding and place more value, quite frankly, on the role that marketing is playing in all of this. So I agree, Yvonne. Anything you can do to educate the sales team around online behavior, what it means, what marketing's role is, and then the kind of information that this gives to salespeople, I mean, that's powerful. I talked to salespeople who said they would never sell without that kind of insight again.
Interesting. It definitely has helped us make, you know, actually connect marketing to sales much more. And so when we talk about the revenue cycle, they understand now what that means, because lead scoring, it's funny, I can, you know, a little anecdote about lead scoring, because that's actually what helps us really open the funnel or close the funnel based on what that lead flow really needs to be to our sales team. So when we actually, you know, we actually were using a partner at the time to generate our lead scoring, our first lead scoring program, and we brought him in and we brought our sales team in, and the actual lead scoring program that we built was really about an opportunity. It really wasn't about, you know, creating a lead scoring system. We created something that created an opportunity. Well, what does a great opportunity look like? Well, I want to know when they want to have their event. I want to know that they actually have an event that they want to plan. And, you know, so it was something in which we created a lead scoring program that really wasn't even a lead scoring program, because it wasn't about a lead. It was about an opportunity, because our sales team was so engaged and wanting to see the key outcome of an opportunity generated, not necessarily just
that.
The lead that we have to cultivate. So it was kind of the best thing, but then kind of the worst thing for the marketer, because, you know, we still needed to generate a second lead scoring program. But it actually helped them understand the value of lead scoring. And I still think there's a little bit of separation within that, because, why are you holding these leads back? Why can't, if we need to open the funnel a little bit more, why can't we then pass those along? So
that's right. That's right. That's what they think about. So I want to go back to, you know, kind of before we get off into lead distribution, I want to kind of go back into campaigns. And maybe you could share with us some really successful campaigns that you've run, or maybe some metrics. I mean, because, you know, in your world, it's all about tying campaigns to revenue, not just doing campaigns for the sake of activity. So maybe you could share with us some examples or some campaign metrics that you guys have been able to achieve.
Absolutely. One of the things that we recently, an exercise we went through with our actual team analyst, we went through to really understand, well, where are we really knocking it out of the park? And what we found was, you know, the way we measure ourselves is on net new and then also nurturing of existing, either existing contacts and or customers. And what we found was, you know, our nurture programs are clearly our winner. And, of course, any great marketer knows that, you know, they're far easier to convert an existing contact that is one educated about your product and so forth. And the net new category is so much more of the challenge. And that's where, you know, really I think the testing plays into it. But, you know, really the effectiveness piece for us was when that became so alarming to our sales management team, is they didn't realize how effective our nurture programs actually were in retaining and upselling existing customers. And it was really mind-blowing when, you know, we actually had our analysts just, you know, pull up. I mean, this, it was a definite win. for marketing, because what we realized is that, you know, we were converting in terms of a strongest contributor to revenue based on, you know, different correlations and the overall trend. You know, our marketing nurture programs were by far and away attributing to the greatest number of leads generated into our pipeline, but then those that convert in the shortest number of days. And so when we something in 46 days, that really tells me that, one, we're educating someone properly, that, two, we're creating a win situation both for my sales team, but then also, two, for my customer, that we're doing something right as a marketing team.
That is awesome. So did you do that from day one?
Nurture? No, actually, that was something that it wasn't something that we started with. It probably took us a little bit longer than we'd like, because I think we were still in the concept of a drop a campaign reactive mode, as opposed to take the step back and put the right strategic and planning steps in place. Because it's so easy to do that, because you're like, oh my gosh, we got to generate more leads, and so many marketers could get trapped into that, especially those that, you know, because revenue marketing is a little bit, it's not just a little bit, it is a drastically different mindset. And so the evolution to have people train that it's not about dropping a campaign, it's about those marginal shifts in percentages of conversions at each step in the sales and revenue cycle. So, you know, how
absolutely
do you manage
wait,
that?
Wait, I've got to, that yeah. is the perfect statement. It's about marginal conversions from one stage to the next. Small changes in conversion rates can make a huge impact on revenue. So I love that. You're absolutely right, Yvonne. And a lot of marketers just think about number of leads, but it's, you know, the revenue marketer is consumed with conversions through the pipeline from top to bottom. That's where the bread and butter, especially the deeper you can get into the pipeline and impact conversions, you know, that's actually, I think, Jim's number two, you know, deep pipeline conversion. And marketing can have a huge impact on that, absolutely huge. I mean, just look at the example that you just gave us where, you know, marketing was the strongest contributor to revenue from for current customers, both in retention and upselling programs. I mean, what a shocker that must have been to sales to see that.
Oh, yeah, and I think the best part about that is our actual marketing expense per lead and the actual percentage of revenue generated from a campaign that costs us virtually nothing on our expense line budget. It is, you know, it's a clear win with, one, you know, my EVP, but then also, two, with my sales leadership team, because they know the effectiveness of just retaining customers. That's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
net
let me ask you a question, because
a big challenge.
You clearly have, net new is always a big challenge, isn't it? But let me ask you a question, because I get this a lot. So, you know, we work with a lot of customers, and, you know, a lot of times we'll go in and we'll say, now your biggest opportunity, the low-hanging fruit, is to really work within your existing customer base. And they'll come back and say, no, we really have to work on net new. Is that because it's the hardest thing to get, and there's some kind of strategic initiative that that the company has to go get new logos?
As far as, you know, it's funny, the net new, it's kind of like it gives you new opportunities to go deep within the organization. And for us, because, you know, we have an offering that is diverse, it scales with companies, so, and it can be used at multiple different buyer types within an organization, you know, we can go deep within an organization. So all we need is really the entry point. So when we talk about a net new customer, that gives us the opportunity just to, as it's just literally now starting to walk into somebody's house. But then as you start to walk from room to room to room, we start to gather, you know, so many net new contacts and opportunities, you know, to reach them, educate them, and then potentially convert them. So that net new provides us with a wealth of opportunities for, you know, one, the revenue team as a whole, because now marketing can reach out to this new organization, go deep with actual contacts within the organization with all the different applications that are offering support. So
that's a great
segmentation piece comes together.
Yeah. I mean, but just think about what you just said. I mean, earlier you said, you know, sales and marketing, you're on one team. It's called a revenue team. So here you are combined. You have a strategy I'd call land and expand, right? go out and get a net new logo, you know, get in. You need an entry point, and marketing helps create that. And further, marketing continues to create the expansion opportunities that are in that account as well. So that is a great example of how you two are working hand in glove together to really create an impact on revenue. That's a great example, Yvonne.
Land and expand. I love it, Debbie.
Land and expand. I just heard that.
Gateway to opportunity.
The gateway to opportunity. There you go. Absolutely. So that's a great summary of kind of like your approach to campaigns. And we'll just share with our listeners, you know, this approach that you have to creating campaigns. How long did it take you to create that approach?
How long did the actual process take, or
No. You know, in order for you to say, okay, Debbie, I want to be on the radio show, and I'm going to tell you about a great approach to getting campaigns that create revenue. It begins strategically, you know, the four steps, what's the need, what's the outcome, what are the targeting. How long did it take you to get to the place where you knew that, and you knew that this was an effective way to create campaigns?
Ooh, I still don't think it's the entire playbook or roadmap to campaign eliteness. I definitely think it's working for us. Because we now understand, well, what do we need to drive to? And that becomes our number one objective for that program. And I think what the other thing it does is it levels the expectation across the organization as far as what you predict the results are going to be. So when we looked at, you know, how long did it take us to evolve to that model, I think we're still evolving it because, you know, we're still always tweaking our campaigns, but the process that we go through really, I think, is one very solid, but I think there's always room for, you know, injecting a new piece, and it could be, you know, just reevaluating the channels, which I don't think we do enough of because, you know, even how we use the different channels within a campaign, either on the media side and or how we actually reach that potential end user or buyer, that needs to be factored more into that campaign strategy than probably we're doing right now. So I think it's constantly being improved, and I think that that's what, you know, one of the things I want to make sure that I stress is that, you know, as a marketer, I mean, I think our jobs have evolved significantly, you know, and at least I can say in the length of my career, you know, because when the internet wasn't around really or leveraged to that extent to help drive revenue, you know, when I first set out on this journey. And so I see this and say never get stuck in your process. Never stop evolving or learning because
our clients are changing, right?
Absolutely.
So two last questions. So when you take a look at how you guys measure the impact that you're making on the organization, what are some of the key metrics, Yvonne, that you guys use?
We actually break them down. So we actually have a couple different ways. We look at, you know, the marketing effectiveness metrics. So, you know, how well did, and you can break it down to every single touch point. And then how did that buyer, you know, how did buyers respond to that email? How did, you know, between click through to form submission to then pathing them through the revenue, you know, the revenue cycle. But then just number of leads per salesperson, the lead number of leads by channel. You know, what are the marketing channels that are performing and how then are people interacting with us? We can get down to the campaign level, down to the actual individual email level. So we kind of have a different campaign hierarchy that helps us measure and report things at different levels based on the type of person that needs to see it. So the person that's concerned with click-through is looking or email effectiveness, you're looking at click-throughs. You're looking to see, you know, opens. You're trying to look at form submissions. You know, you look at just the effectiveness of the tactic. But then as you start to move it upward in the actual hierarchy, you know, how is that channel performing for us? The email as it plugs into this entire campaign between media, you know, how referrals and PR and social and all these other factors that are really affected by a campaign and how that also drives additional leads, awareness, and so forth, all those different, how are the different channels contributing to revenue in terms of just total number of leads? But then as you bounce that into a revenue metric, so a lot of those marketing metrics are separate then from what we report in terms of just revenue. You know, what is the actual number of leads, you know, that we actually generated, just sheer inquiry. And then as that moves to the actual serious decisions waterfall, you know, into marketing qualified leads and sales qualified leads, sales accepted leads, number of actual sales opportunities. And then as we start to then watch how they convert via our 10, 25, 50, 75, 90 percentages of revenue in that funnel, that's when we start to say, okay, great, where was their point of origination? And we look at our attribution model for revenue. Even though right now we still are we're single sourced, we can look at the different levels of activity to help break that down even further, just to look at their behavioral and how they actually interfaced with us throughout the entire revenue journey.
So you guys are actually able to track that all the way through. You pretty much can do closed loop reporting on your impact on revenue.
We sure can, and I think what we see is we'll look at it at the very highest level from the 10,000 foot view in the sky. At overall trends, where are things working? Where are they not? Where do we see areas of improvement? But like you mentioned earlier, our intentionality is where we see the greatest opportunity to convert revenue, and so we'll always start there. That is our number one priority. And if right now we're driving more revenue from existing customers, you bet that's going to be our mainstay, and that will always be our focus. But then you also need to make sure that you're not ignoring the other.
Oh, yeah, I love that. And I got to tell you, a lot of times marketers, you know, it's the group that people just throw stuff on. And I tell marketers all the time, the best thing that you can do when you want to become, you know, into demand generation or revenue marketing is just say no, right? Just say, look, I'm a revenue machine. I'm part of a revenue engine. Do you want me doing revenue? You want me to do this Mickey Mouse stuff? And I have metrics that show that that other thing is just a complete and total waste of time. But, again, with the numbers, you know, you can come back and you can have that conversation. So I think it's very impressive, Yvonne, that you guys can actually calculate complete closed loop because, well, I think a lot of marketers talk about it. I don't think a lot of marketers really do it that well. I just don't.
Well, I think that was the biggest epiphany moment is when we knew that we were able to convert more, and this is our mainstay, that people said we need to have all of these key vertical campaigns. We need to have this other more broad horizontal far-reaching campaign, but then we also need to have this other thing that was called nurture that was completely ignored. And as marketers, we knew that, but the sales team didn't really understand. Well, see, gosh, listen to me already. I'm saying marketing and sales, and here we're talking about the revenue team. We are one, but we do have disciplines, you know, and we have key responsibilities to that revenue cycle. So, and we knew that nurture is obviously a wonderful way to convert a conversion path to revenue. And so how did we then open their eyes to that? It was really, like I said, once marketing and sales aligned, they really were able to see the effectiveness of nurture.
That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. So let's say you're talking to a brand new a marketer who is just now, you know, implementing marketing automation, and they're really, you know, they're entering into that demand generation stage, and they really want to be an elite revenue marketer. But they're at the very beginning of the journey. What are the top three pieces of advice you might give them, Yvonne?
Invest in your data. Campaign effectiveness and revenue and actual driving revenue will not happen if you do not have the right, if you're not talking to the right people, and if you don't spend the time to get to know them. I would say that the second, you know, these are not in any prioritization, but number two, I would say make sure that your entire sales and marketing teams, even though they're maybe separated by discipline, that you are in very clear alignment with the key outcomes that you need to support, because those are expectations that you need to meet, and at some point those become your KPIs. And I think as a marketer, it's easy to not always look at those KPIs with as much importance as we need to, because we get so sucked into the little minutia of the tactical level.
Oh, yeah, we do, don't we?
Yeah, and so taking that step back, but then also I think three, it would be make sure that you evangelize wins and say, well, define what a win looks like, and then clearly make sure that you are attributing it to the, you know, factoring in what it takes to actually drive to it. So, and make sure you're communicating that, because your sales team is your greatest fan and supporter, but they're also your customer. And if you understand that you can also empower your sales team to help you drive that same revenue piece that they're doing as a marketer, that sales enablement becomes such an effective tool to help you convert from both campaigns, but then also convert things faster within the actual revenue cycle. So by enabling your sales team, giving them the content, giving them even the, you know, with an Eloqua, you actually have this Microsoft Outlook plugin, you can give them templates that they can actually use that are consistent on message, on brand, that carry the messages that you can define, and they can also customize them, but that help them convert faster and help drive your leads through the faster through the cycle and make you win and look better in the end. So, and as a revenue team, that is success.
Completely agree. I think that I think your whole story, I think your whole journey, Yvonne, of you guys have been at this for 3.5 years now. You didn't get there overnight. And I think a lot of marketers, I think sometimes it's because of the way the vendors sell software. They make it sound like it's so easy. You know, transformation happens overnight. But there's a lot of people and there's a lot of process that's associated with being successful into making a revenue impact. And, you know, sometimes in companies, you just don't get there overnight. It just takes time because new processes, people having to do new things, a new way to take a look at a business, it just takes time to change. But I think you guys, I mean, I'm just a huge fan. I think that what you've been able to accomplish at NCM and just your drive and your passion, especially, I love the passion that you have for this space. So I can't thank you enough for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Debbie. It's been a tremendous compliment, one, to be invited, but then also to be able to share, you know, our story as a company. Because like you said, it's, you know, being passionate about it is great, but when you actually are getting to the key outcomes that you need to as a revenue team, that to me is the greatest definition of success. So it feels good.
Completely agree. Okay, everybody, our next radio show, we're going to take next week off for July 4th, but we'll be back the week after. So everyone have a wonderful July 4th holiday, and go out there and create some revenue. Have a good day. Bye-bye.